Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Looks like schools will have an extra 2 weeks to prepare for reopening this fall. Massachusetts Teachers Association says that the State Education Department reached the agreement with the MTA and two other teachers' unions yesterday. Teachers would use the extra 2 weeks to plan for all possible scenarios this fall, from a full return to the classroom to an all-remote learning plan and some sort of hybrid of the two. In a second, we're going to invite some folks who are grappling with these challenges to join us, but we want to open this up to you, too. What do you think? Have you heard the news? Is a two-week delay enough time to have schools really ready for fall learning? And I want to know, are you a parent and are you struggling with whether or not to send your child back to school in September? Does this additional delay, or it's not an additional delay, does this delay make you worry? Does it put you and your children in a bind? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So let's turn to our guests now. We're joined by Peter Light, the superintendent of the Acton-Boxborough Regional School District. Peter, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon, Tiziana. Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Francis Pina, a math teacher at Charlestown High School. Francis, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Peter, I'm going to start with you. We spoke with you back in May. You wrote this really thoughtful letter to your school community. And back then at the time, it seemed like the headline from that letter was, it's going to be okay. It's kind of not feeling like it's going to be okay, Peter.
That's a great lead-in. if we were in a press conference, I'd ask if there was a question there too, or just a lead to talk for a moment. The lead was it's going to be okay. And I think we're in such a place of heightened anxiety right now with the number of unknowns that it feels often like it's not going to be okay. But I want to come back to, I do think it's going to be okay. The bottom line, and I can't speak for every school district, but I can certainly speak for ours. And I think many school districts are in the same place. We've been spending a lot of time planning for a variety of contingencies to make sure that when we do welcome students back in the fall, whatever that looks like, we're making sure it returns as a special place for them. And I think, a message to our educators is, we've been prioritizing all of our educators' health and safety just as we are our students. And that's been top of our mind. But we also really are focused on making sure that school is a special place, regardless of how we come back.
So, Francis, you heard Peter's answer there. When I heard the news this morning, I found myself wondering, okay, on the one hand, is this delay symbolic of the rock and hard place that this coming school year is stuck between? Or on the other hand, is this progress toward a viable approach to moving kids' learning forward this fall? We got a good perspective from Peter there. What about you? What do you think?
I would certainly agree that this is like that rock in a hard place type of scenario, and trying to accommodate for the fact of, I feel with a lot of the time that we have taken going from last March to the end of this past school year, is that we haven't really been in a really good space of thinking about the innovation of the teaching practices, what is necessary for quality teaching, and making sure that we have the accessibility and equity issues accounted for. A lot of what's been happening has been a lot of discussions around logistics, and rightfully so, different teacher unions and educators and other stakeholders saying, hey, we haven't had a seat at the table when it comes to these plans. So front loading these 10 days gives us a chance to think about those teaching practices and what would be the best ways of implementing some innovation. It may put us in a position to do something good, but we had an opportunity to do something great. And so I'm just looking at the bright side of that part. Like, let's do good with those 10 days.
Peter, I want to go to the calls in a second, but I want to pick up on something Francis just said about educators needing a seat at the table. As a superintendent, do you have eyes into, and do you feel like the right combination of people have had a seat at the table on planning?
Yeah, I think, the planning that's gone into trying to reopen schools this fall is just extraordinarily complex. And, the right number of getting everyone to the table is everyone, but that's just not always feasible. We've certainly taken great strides to make sure that we work very closely with our educators, our leaders in our association in particular. And, you know, we've surveyed our staff multiple times throughout the process. We continue to do that, making sure that staff voices make their way into the planning process. We reach out to groups of educators, depending on the topic that we're looking at. And I think it's just so important that people feel that they have a voice, you know, but I also recognize that, you know, until everyone somehow feels that their voice is heard, not everyone is going to feel like they have a voice. And that's a challenge we have to continue to work through.
All right, let's go to the phones here. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to share your thoughts about how you're feeling about the start of the school year. Are you worried? Are you excited? Do you think it's going to happen the way you want it to? How would you like your kids to return, or how would you like to return yourself? We've got Max on the line from Weston. Max, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'm a high school student, and I'm just wondering if the schools have said anything, if the state has said anything about how high school athletics might end up returning.
Thanks for the question, Max. Francis, I'll turn to you. Are you aware of how that's going to happen, or if it's going to happen in your school at Charlestown High School?
Yeah, I believe the superintendent is meeting with a consortium of different coaches, especially in thinking about fall sports before, I think, going into winter and spring sports. So I believe a lot of those discussions are ongoing. But if the look at professional sports is any indication, doesn't seem like it's looking that good from my perspective and as a teacher, but I know that that's an ongoing conversation with our local superintendent in Boston.
And Peter, what about you? Do you know any more on this at the state level?
Sure. You know, and, you know, first I'll say to Max, congratulations, because I know you have a new principal in Weston and he's just a tremendous individual. So congratulations. You're going to love him. But high school athletics is an ongoing conversation. MIAA, the board did vote for September 14th as the first official day. I think they wanted to let schools get open for students. We are waiting for additional guidance. I know there was some youth sports guidance provided by the governor's office. However, we're also waiting for MIAA and our State Department of Education to provide schools with additional guidance around what fall sports look like. We are hoping to receive that in the next, I believe, 1 to 2 weeks. So stay tuned for more on that.
All right, let's go back to the phones again. 800-423-8255. Charlie's on the line from Franklin. Charlie, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. As a parent with three kids in the Franklin Public Schools, we have felt tremendously supportive by the school system, and I just want to thank the teachers, and I hope that they get all the time that they need, and if 2 weeks is all we get, then that'll have to be it. But additionally, I'd like to call on employers to be really as generous as they can. I know it's a hard time for everybody, but if we can get the whole system working together, then parents don't have to have the anxiety level they might have in waiting for the kids to start officially again.
Thanks for that call, Charlie. And in addition to the good feelings and the gratitude that Charlie expressed there, Francis, he raises a tricky issue, which is, from a very practical standpoint, for a lot of families, school is not only the place that educates children, but it also allows people to go to work because their children are in care during that time. They've been out for a long time. If the school day is delayed, the start of school is delayed further, that can put real hardship, especially on families who have to work. They're essential workers. Maybe they can't work at home. How should we be thinking about and balancing that as we get ready to go back to school, Francis?
Yeah, I think that's a very challenging thing to balance because it has to be done from an equity lens of, you know, I'm working in a high school, depending on the needs of the student, maybe they have an IEP or severe disabilities, they may need someone to be right there with them. They can't be left alone. But you know, I would say probably the majority of our high school students may be able to be left alone to participate in remote learning if we are fully remote, so parents can potentially go back to work. I see that as a bigger challenge for the elementary school level. And it's also a very bigger challenge, or a different challenge rather, on the elementary school level to even be back in school when we think about self-regulation and manipulatives and sharing objects. A lot of the learning that you do in elementary schools in the younger ages is hands-on. So I think we need to really be thinking about how we're going to use a lot of these community spaces. How can we have been doing a little bit more collaboration, you know, with local with community centers, with even in Boston, with colleges, with universities that are not having students back? How can we do this in a way that is the neighborhood, like really supporting the neighborhood, so that way we can really be creative about that aspect of the childcare aspect. I mean, schools do supply that, and that may not be my primary job function, but it is a benefit that I do have, and I do care for all my students and do care for their health when I am there with them.
I want to play some sound for the two of you. WBUR spoke with Kevin Murray, Executive Director of the Mass Advocates for Children, about this delay. Murray said it could be a big positive as long as the time is used well.
I think any time that can be put into thinking more creatively about how remote education happens, what is the interaction between remote and in-person education, if there is to be in-person education? And perhaps for me, for Mac, the most important thing, how are we going to engage with families about this process?
So, Peter, I feel such a tension in listening to that. That makes absolute sense. And it makes sense what Francis was just saying, too. There's this other voice that says, we've been doing distance education since last March. There are a lot of complexities here, but many of the basics that we need to prepare for, we've known about. Masks, social distancing, reducing personal contact in tight spaces among students, etc. Why 10 more days? Haven't we known? Shouldn't we have been planning for, you know, as Kevin Murray says here, all along for this?
Tiziana, I think that's a great question. You know, I'm going to go just a little off topic first, because I think you hinted at this with the last caller with Charlie, but, you know, we need to take a balanced assessment of risk. You know, there's absolutely no doubt in anyone's mind that health and safety need to be our top priorities, particularly with the pandemic going on. But there are definitely other risks that we need to be thinking about in all of our planning. And, you know, there's a new project that just got launched called the Parabola Project, and they really outline it well. But, you know, we have additional risks like loss of learning, food insecurity. We just talked about parental employment, and, you know, that's as much of a risk for our students as it is just for their parents. The social emotional impact of schools being closed, you know, and the lack of access to some of the essential services for children as well. And I think, you know, schools play a vital role in all of those. And we have been planning all along for the three things. Amid all of the uncertainty about what leads to the spread of the virus is a real sense of certainty about what can be done to prevent the spread of the virus. And schools have been planning very dutifully to make sure that people understand the need for masks, and that masks really need to be worn by our students when they return to school, because that's a huge protective factor. The idea of maintaining appropriate distance within our classrooms is also an area that schools certainly have been planning for. You know, and then really thinking about all of our practices around hygiene to make sure that, you know, students are regularly washing hands, our educators are washing hands and sanitizing hands. Those are really three critical practices that are going to help protect people and mitigate risk as we return. I think the 10 days is just such an important piece, because for all of the complexity of the planning process, when you bring a plan to fruition, people have a lot of questions. And I think we need to make sure coming back that, you know, not only do our educators know what the plan is, but they have an opportunity to ask questions, process that. It's one thing when a district makes a plan at the district level, but then it has to be implemented at schools where each school is just a little bit different from the other school. And there's a lot of planning that goes into making sure everyone is first and foremost safe. But then we have to think about the learning that was unfinished from the previous year and what needs to be done as we move forward. We need to think about the social emotional needs of students and what strategies we have in place in classrooms. And we really need to make sure our educators feel very supported in implementing a remote learning program in the fall that is far more robust and substantial than what we were able to do in the spring. We were in crisis education mode last spring, and we still will be in crisis education mode, but we have had an opportunity to think forward at this point.
Peter, I appreciate that, and I want to build on that. We have just a little bit of time yet left. So, Francis, I'm going to turn to you for this one because there's also a tremendous urgency around students who were experiencing structural disadvantages in their education, whether that be through access to technology, quality of the schools, home environment that's conducive to learning, trauma, now also experiencing disproportionate impact from the virus itself, and now this disrupted learning environment with still a great deal of uncertainty. How do we go forward intentionally, right? Not in crisis learning anymore, in a way that doesn't leave some of our young people behind?
Yes, I mean, you said the key word for me right there is intentional. I think about across our district, well, really even across our state, we have different socioeconomics that come into play, not only just race, but as well as like income levels. So I know the American Institute of Research released a study that talked about the difference in, you know, low income districts tended to spend a lot of time with remote learning reviewing content, and more middle and high income districts were teaching new content. So we have to really think about, like, for each of these districts, depending on the context that you are in, how are we starting this year intentionally, you know, really building relationships with our students and with staff? So during that 2 weeks, I know, you know, at my school level, we're going to be meeting not only to really think about content and think about us as a small learning community, but how are we building relationships in the community with ourselves and in classrooms. So that way, when we, you know, begin, you know, whether it's remote or hybrid, you know, I'm hoping for remote, but that's a separate thing, that we can leverage those relationships that we are building with students. And I know some schools may have to think about, you know, the looping aspect. You know, will teachers potentially be teaching new content that they haven't taught before, because mm-hmm. they may loop up or with students to maintain some of those relationships. So I think like that type of intention and conversation and also, you know, intentionally thinking about, okay, there is this piece, like during COVID, if you would have told me, you know, all the things with, you know, Black Lives Matter and stuff coming up would have overtaken mm-hmm. the COVID discussion, I would have been surprised. So that also plays a role and needs to be talked about and addressed.
And that's Frances Pina, a math teacher at Charlestown High School. Frances, I appreciate you taking time out to join us today.
Oh, thank you. It was a blast.
And we've also had Peter Light, superintendent of the Acton Boxborough Regional School District. Peter, it was great to have you back. Thanks for your time, too.
Thanks so much and have a great day.